Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Well, it's on to November now for the winners in Missouri's Tuesday primary. It'll be a Greitens-Koster race for governor, Blunt and Kander for the Senate, and no race at all for city circuit attorney. And something of a surprise in St. Louis County, and lots more to talk about. We'll be taking a closer look on today's program. Joining me in studio are David Robertson, who chairs the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri St. Louis, and St. Louis Public Radio reporters Rachel Lippman and Jason Rosenbaum. Thank you all so much for being with me. I know you were all up late last night, so thanks for coming in.
Very much so.
Yes. Very early this morning.
Very early. Yes, isn't that always the way on Election Day? I'd like to begin with getting an impression from each of you from your different perspectives on what happened yesterday. Dave Robertson, I'll start with you. What's your basic impression?
I think in the Republican Party, the outsider sentiment continues to run high, and it helped sweep Eric Greitens into the nomination for the Republican nomination for governor. Greitens did very well across the state. There were a few pockets of areas where opponents did well, but usually Greitens would finish second if he didn't finish first. So he did well across the board in the Republican primary.
And Jason, that was basically your race.
Yeah, for vacationing Joe Manis, obviously, but we both covered that pretty closely. I think that I agree with that sentiment. I also think that it's kind of a showcase that when you have a candidate that doesn't have a lot of name recognition, if that said candidate has millions and millions of dollars to put ads on television and radio, they can become more well-known. And Greitens was able to pull in a lot of money, not only from donors in Missouri who were attracted to his message and profile, but also from some out-of-state donors that gave him six and seven figured contributions. That certainly helped, although the other candidates got large contributions either from themselves, in the case of John Bruner, or from Rex Singfeld and David Humphreys, in the case of Catherine Hanaway and Peter Kinder. So that was almost a situation where there was so much money in the race. I'm not exactly sure like it was as big of a factor as in other situations, such as, say, Russ Carnahan winning lieutenant governor when his two opponents basically raised no money.
We'll talk more about money and the ads as the program evolves.
For sure.
But Rachel, what about your beat?
I was sort of struck by kind of overall how much name recognition helped in some ways and apparently didn't help in others. I was convinced that Peter Kinder, the incumbent lieutenant governor, you know, longtime political figure in the state, was underperforming, and that it was just going to be people be like, oh, I know Kinder, I'm going to, you know, pull the ballot for him. But then you had a Carnahan winning, you had an Ashcroft winning. It's sort of like a, you know, back to the future sort of thing going on there. And in the city races, which is where I sort of focus my attention, there was this kind of competing insider-outsider sentiment. You had some outsiders, quote-unquote, outside of the establishment win some of the races, but then you also had the, in this case, the Democratic establishment win in other portions. So there's this kind of competing tension going on in the city, especially between the outsider sentiment and then putting some of the more traditional names back in office.
This just seems to be a part of the national picture of Dave Robertson in terms of the outsiders having more momentum this time.
Absolutely. And the only place where more moderate candidates won Republican primaries was in Kansas next door to us, where there's a very conservative governor and legislature.
This business of name recognition is an interesting one. I share Rachel's view that Peter Kinder has won three times statewide, and everybody knows him on all sides and ends of the state. Surprising that he didn't do better. And also Catherine Hanaway. I mean, she was a powerhouse in the state legislature for a period of time and was therefore well-known, but she finished last. That really surprised me.
It surprised me in the sense that they are so well-known, and I thought that they would have stronger bases in parts of Missouri beyond their home base, Kinder in southeast Missouri and Hanaway in St. Louis County. But it didn't turn out that way. The person who wound up with a reasonably strong base outside of his home area was Bruner in southwest Missouri. Otherwise, Greitens did well across the state.
Right. And I think that it also, there's a truism in Missouri politics that sometimes people who are elected to legislative offices think that they're more well-known than they actually are. A perfect example is in the attorney general's race, where Kurt Schaefer, who is the chairman of the very powerful Senate Appropriations Committee, got blown out by Josh Hawley, who had never run for office before. And I wouldn't say it's the exact same thing with Peter Kinder, for example, because he's won statewide before. I think that he was hampered by the fact that he had the least amount of money and you know, wasn't on TV as much as the other candidates. But Catherine Hanaway may fall into that situation. She hadn't been in elected office since 2004. Being U.S. attorney is a high-profile position, but it's something she hadn't held in a long time. And it just kind of shows that, you know, people who are in these high positions in government who are trying to win statewide offices, it's not always a good parlay into actually following through.
And high profile doesn't always necessarily mean, quote, well known either. I'm sure there are plenty of sort of, you know, more secretive high profile positions, but your average Joe probably doesn't remember Catherine Hanaway as U.S. attorney unless she, you know, brought it up. And even probably some who follow politics more closely who are younger wouldn't necessarily remember Hanaway as assistant or as a U.S. attorney.
And the last thing on that is that being well-known doesn't mean you're untarnished. And Peter Kinder faced that problem several years ago. We don't know what effect that had.
That's right. High profile doesn't mean that people like you.
Right.
just means that they know you.
Right.
I looked at some of the figures this morning with regard to overall results, and I noticed that GOP votes outnumber Democratic votes statewide by about 3-1. Does that surprise anyone? It kind of surprised me.
No, not at all, because the primaries on the Republican side statewide were a lot more vigorous than the Democratic side. Obviously, there's going to be more Democratic votes in a place like St. Louis City or parts of St. Louis County. But, I mean, when Chris Koster was going up against Leonard Steinman and Charlie Wheeler, who are wonderful people, but one of them is kind of a crazy bearded guy from Jefferson City. The other one is the 90-year-old former mayor of Kansas City. That's not really going to draw a lot of people out. And even some of the down ballot ones, which were competitive, like Attorney General for Teresa Hensley versus Zimmerman or Judy Baker versus Pat Contreras, the competitiveness was a lot lower profile than the Republicans.
I didn't get the sense that there was going to be any kind of disappointment with whichever candidate won. You didn't see a never anyone movement emerging.
Right.
And the turnout, as I understand the figures, just slightly less than what the prediction was. I have it at about 30%. They were looking for 30-31%, something like that.
Well, the city thought maybe 40%, which I thought was absurdly high. It was higher than I thought. It was going to be at about 28% unofficially. But for some reason, city election officials seem to think that circuit attorney and maybe some of the other primaries would drive votes more than it did.
It did rain in the morning,
that is true.
So that definitely had an impact.
While you're mentioning the city, let's just talk for a moment about what happened there. We'll come back to it, but the circuit attorney's race, as we have discussed before, was a big deal. It was a marquee race in this area.
Definitely. I think anytime you have the top prosecutor in the city of St. Louis who sort of is making the decisions about parts of the crime fighting and prosecution strategy in the city, when you have an open race like that, yes, it's going to get some attention.
And Kimberly Gardner?
Kimberly Gardner. She will be the first African-American to hold that office, assuming there isn't some kind of sneak candidate that gets in November. Mm-hmm. She's got no what is likely to be only token opposition coming in November. So unless something strange happens, that race is hers.
And a disappointment for Jennifer Joyce, whom she's succeeding because Jennifer had picked one of her assistants.
Yes, and this race was... I thought this race would be closer. I didn't think there was a clear favorite coming in. I mean, this is as much of a blowout as a primary race is going to get.
Almost 2-1, I think.
2-1. Yeah, I mean, it was basically 2-1. Kimberly Gardner took in about 19,500 votes. Mary Pat Carl, her nearest competitor, took in about, about 9,900, about 10,000 votes.
Yeah, okay. Back to the governor's race. I think a lot of people are interested in what happened and why. And Jason, let me turn to you with regard to the ads. Mm-hmm. How much of a role did the ads that were omnipresent, it seems, on television, certainly, during the campaign, how much of a role did they play?
I think some may have played a bigger role than others. Obviously, Crichton's ad where he metaphorically blows up the Jefferson City establishment with a gun probably caught a lot of people's attention. I think there were a lot of people within the Missouri political community that really disliked that ad for various reasons. One, they thought that it was kind of stealing a concept from Joe Manchin when he ran for the U.S. Senate. I think there were others who felt it was either glorifying guns or even glorifying war a little bit. But on the other hand, it was a way to kind of introduce the themes of his campaign in a pretty attention-grabbing way. And when you have that ad coupled with a lot of other ads that kind of provided this profile of this person who's done a lot of really impressive things, mm-hmm. I think it was a message that resonated, obviously, because he won in basically every region of the state.
At least right. He didn't go the Jody Ernst route, but that's another story for another
Yeah, that's
day.
Another story.
Yeah. Right. Dave, go ahead.
A couple of other things about Greitens. One is it was critical for him to get his name out. He had enough money to do it, and he did it. And he also put out, in addition to the ad that Jason's talking about, some very reassuring ads that were very polished and that put his name out there in a way that reassured voters that he was first conservative, but second, somebody who could win the election against Koster. So I think that helped him. Third thing, rookies make mistakes. Lots of new candidates who have never run for office, we're seeing that now at the national level, make terrific mistakes. Even veterans make mistakes. But really, Greitens hasn't made a terrible mistake.
And this and that's despite getting attacked pretty mercilessly right. by his opponents. Mm-hmm. And I at our debate, at the St. Louis Public Radio debate, he was attacked, I think, by all three candidates. And I could kind of see he was enjoying it. He liked the fact that he was the center of attention. And not only was he like very forcefully responding to some of the things in ways that is his style, he was throwing some pretty harsh counterpunches, which makes me think that in a hypothetical debate between Koster and Greitens, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, he gave as well as he took. There's
Absolutely.
No question about it. Your thoughts, Rachel, about the ads?
I mean, I haven't seen a lot of them other than the one, you know, that we're kind of talking about. Jason and David, you can maybe speak to this a little better, but, you know, Greitens has done a lot of impressive things. How much did he talk about what he's done in these ads, or how much was he trying to sort of push himself away from the, you know, more moderate kind of, you know, problem-solving past that he has with Mission Continues and some of his fellowships? I didn't see many of the ads, so you guys can kind of talk to that. I would have, you know, hypothetically, if I'm a campaign consultant, Greitens has done some amazing things. Why don't you talk about that in context? Now, that may not be what the voters are looking for, but that sort of astounded me is, you know, you go and look at this guy's resume if you don't know him very well, and it's a kind of an opposite picture, but an interesting contrast to what he shows on TV.
I always felt it was in the background, but maybe it's because I knew what his background
right.
was.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know who he is,
I think the thing people knew was that he was a Navy SEAL, and he's not going to put up with this guff. Yeah. And he's going to be a leader who is an outsider and knows how to get things done, and he's going to get things done. And the combination of the kind of military background with his appeal to the conservative Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, that worked very well.
I was surprised that the more moderate, you know, being approached to run as a Democrat, relationship with Mayor Slay, those kind of things, that didn't turn more people off from him.
Yeah.
It was almost kind of like an overcompensating, you know, I'm really conservative, ignore what I've done in the past.
I hate to get too in the weeds here, but saying you supported Mayor Slay when it's only you only have Democratic options in the city.
That's true.
I know it was an attack that was used against him, but I can guarantee you that a lot of Republicans voted for Mayor Slay because they wanted a say of who their mayor was, and they thought that he was the more conservative, acceptable option than Lewis Reed there. And you saw that manifest itself in 2013 when most of Southwest City voted in overwhelming numbers for Slay. And I guarantee you a lot of Republicans were part of that tally.
But I still wonder if there's this knee-jerk kind of, you know, oh, Democrat is a bad word kind of thing. We saw it in one of the House races in sort of South Central City, the 80th between Ben Murray and Peter Meredith, where Murray ran a flyer against Meredith attempting to tie Meredith to Donald Trump because he was willing to compromise with the Republicans. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
that anything having to do with compromise or associating with the other side seems like it's a bad thing in this election season. And, you know, maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention to the governor's race or to the mood there, but it sort of struck me that kind of stuff doesn't get traction. Like, how many people understand that there's no Republican option in the city?
Let me take a break now. We have to do that. We'll come back and pick up on this conversation. We're talking about yesterday's Missouri primary election and the after aftermath and what lies ahead. My guests in studio are Rachel Lippman, from whom you've just heard. We also have with us in studio Dave Robertson from the University of Missouri-St. Louis and St. Louis Public Radio reporter Jason Rosenbaum. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. So I've got to mention now and get it out of the way about Juana Doobie having won a significant amount of the vote yesterday in that Senate race.
How many people were just sitting there hoping for a race between Juana Doobie and Blunt? I mean, let's get honest.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, and I will not dwell on it too much, but apparently when Juana Doobie actually filed, it was a front page story in the Salem newspaper because it was the first time anybody from Salem had run for the U.S. Senate, which prompted U.S. Representative Jason Smith, who's also from Salem, to be like, what is this, basically?
There's a lot of what is this political season.
Yeah, right.
Any thoughts that caught your eye, I'm sure, as well?
He did a better than he did statewide in Stone County, Missouri.
You know, there's a whole stand-up routine coming out of this.
I had a couple of wags on Twitter last night. I mentioned that, you know, Kander and Blunt won very easily, that they had had token opposition, and somebody responded that they had T-O-K-I-N apostrophe opposition, yes. We're here all day, folks.
It can be never-ending. Back to the governor's race, because I want to get a gubernatorial race. I want to get a couple of sound clips. And starting with Eric Greitens, you know, the primary campaign is over, but if you listen to what he had to say last night, his campaign is underway.
Chris Koster and other career politicians have constricted people's sense for what is possible. And what's so fantastic, what you see here tonight, is all of these people around Missouri who are standing up, who want better for themselves and better for their families, and that's what we offer them.
All right. Well, that's Eric Greitens, who is the Republican candidate for governor. Any thoughts? He's went right at it, Jason.
And that wasn't the only time he went after Koster. He went after him pretty meticulously during his victory speech as well. And I think that's going to set the tone going forward. I think if it had been Peter Kinder versus Chris Koster, I think it still would have been a pretty negative campaign. But I think it would have been probably a referendum on right to work. And I think the Bruner and Hanaway would have been maybe less issue-oriented. But I think neither one of these candidates is going to pull any punches whatsoever against each other.
And Koster obviously had his victory well in hand before we knew the results of the GOP primary. But surrogates from the Democratic Governors Association, I mean, you had press releases firing back and forth. I'm sure they had them queued up for each candidate. But a race would be called at, you know, X point in time, and X plus five later, you see the press release from the Republican Governors Association, the Democratic Governors Association, etc.
And his campaign ads for the general have already started. They started.
I saw it on TV today.
Yeah. Well, let's hear what he had to say following his victory last night.
For months, we have watched this unfold. The most disturbing political campaign in the last 50 years. Candidates shooting machine guns and doing sit-ups for the cameras. Candidates mocking the disabled and even questioning the grief of a Gold Star mother.
All right. That is the Democratic candidate for governor, Mr. Koster. And obviously he was drawing, David, on some of the things going on nationally as well as in the state of Missouri for his campaign setup.
Yeah. Every Republican candidate is running with Donald Trump as their running mate. And if we elected dog catchers, which we don't, those Republican candidates would be running with Trump as a running mate.
Does that help or hurt in Missouri, given that Trump actually won the primary?
Well, that was going to be what I was going to say. Right now, Trump is not doing great. It's a little early. He could possibly improve his standing. And I have seen polling showing that the state is close, but I have to, and I'm going to tread carefully here, the polling for the primary was pretty bad, okay? There was situations where people were supposed to win, and then they got blown out. In the governor's race, it said it was going to be a nail-biter, and Greitens won by 10 points. It was well beyond the margin of error. So it's hard for me to just say, 41-40 in the presidential race, and I should say it's close, because if it's not close, if Trump wins, then that type of argument that Koster does is not going to be as effective, because you're basically saying does the Republican candidate X stand with the person that the majority of Missourians are going to vote for president? I'm not sure that it will work. Now, if it's close and Clinton does well, then it will work.
Yeah. Our colleague Joe Manis pointed out time and time again during the primary that these polls are valueless because so few people vote that it's really hard to get an accurate
poll. There were some issues, and I'm not going to call anybody out specifically, but there was oftentimes polls were used that used automatic polling with not on a live person talking. Yeah. And I think that general – and you can maybe be the true arbiter, but I've always understood that those – polls have some big issues with them. And then there is a lot of polls with small sample sizes. Yeah. And in a state like this, which is a pretty large state, I'm just not sure a small sample size poll will get you the most accurate result. What do you think?
Some of the robocall polls are better than others. SurveyUSA, which was used, is pretty good. And Nate Silver gives it a good grade. And he's graded all of these pollsters. Mason-Dixon doesn't get as good a grade, and it showed, I think, in some of the results, some of the projections that poll gave. I'd say the thing that Koster and lots of other Democrats are betting on is that Trump is an unfolding story, and there's more to come. And we saw just in the last few days that they're betting that some Republicans will get off board, but much more important, they're counting on Trump to get out the vote in this state.
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder how Catherine Hanaway feels this morning. What do you think? She's going to be terrifically disappointed.
I'm sure that she's disappointed. Yeah. I mean, she was the first person, I think, to announce for governor. She raised a decent amount of money. A lot of it came from Rex Ziegfeld. So she was able to get on TV pretty well. And, you know, I think her and Kinder were pretty specific on what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. The outsidery candidates like Greitens and Bruner, well, I don't want to say that all their responses were kind of general and vague. The more experienced ones, I think, had a little bit more specificity. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she's disappointed. I did hear from her, and I'm sure you're about to play a clip, that I think that she's looking on the bright side after coming up short.
She is. She was very gracious in defeat. We certainly have to say that. Let's listen to what she had to say.
You know, it was a massive tidal wave that swept away lots of good candidates in the presidential race and lots of good candidates in this race, but Mr. Greitens is a Navy SEAL and a Rhodes Scholar, and I think he's got a message that Missourians have obviously warmed to.
And then she went on to say that she was going to support him in the November election. No great surprise there.
I don't think so, because it's been my general experience that when there's a really when there's a race that's very contentious, but the result is pretty clear, I think it's easier to rally around the winner. I think a good example of that is in 2012, you had a three-way race for state Senate between Jamila Nasheed, Jeanette Mott Oxford, and Robin Wright Jones. Jamila Nasheed won decisively. And then afterwards, I think all the candidates buried the hatchet. I wouldn't be surprised if that occurred eventually, though I do know that there's some Republican activists who really don't like Greitens, but I think that maybe they don't want Koster to win, so they're going to have to get over it, basically.
Yeah, that's a lot easier for them, I'm sorry, than it is for the presidential election, because the policy distinctions between these Republican candidates are not that great.
No, they're almost non-existent. So
I'm curious how, and I know that this is sort of a drop in the bucket in terms of how much money he has, but Rex Ziegfeld threw a ton of money into this race, and the three candidates for whom he provided the most support, they all failed, and in the case of Kurt Schaefer, pretty spectacularly.
Right.
So, I mean, I know he's not sitting there going to be having to pinch pennies now, but I mean, what does this settle the dispute between him and the Humphreys in terms of who's, like, you know, the big Republican donor now? Does he go search for another target? What's going on there?
My question is Ziegfeld going to write a large check to Koster? You know, one thing that's not talked about a lot in Missouri politics is that Koster took money from Ziegfeld after he switched parties. I think it's almost $500,000 from 2008 to 2012. He agrees with Ziegfeld on some issues, not all. I'm not sure if Koster needs to accept money from him. I wouldn't be surprised if he declined it, just because there's going to be other sources that are going to be less controversial. But I think it's an open question, given that Koster has taken his money before, whether he would take it again.
Sinkfeld lost with Bev Randles in the lieutenant governor's race. She lost with Schaefer, and he lost with Hanaway.
Yeah.
You know, it just boggles my mind over time how unsuccessful he has been in spending his money in politics.
But you know,
he doesn't have that many winners overall.
But the Humphreys family had been unsuccessful at times, too, in the past. Mm-hmm. And last night, they had a great night.
Yeah.
I mean, Holly winning over Schaefer was a big victory. They won a bunch of legislative races that were key. Like in the St. Louis area, Bill Igel is probably going to be the next state senator from St. Charles, and he will vote for right to work, unlike Tom Dempsey. Even like in a Democratic situation, there was a big push, although a very disorganized push, to get rid of Courtney Curtis in North St. Louis County. The Humphreys gave him some money, and lo and behold, the anti-Curtis vote basically canceled each other out, and Curtis is going to have a third term in the Missouri House. So it's a continuum. Sometimes you do better than others. There have been times when Rex Sinkfeld has won. I mean, a good example of that is 2013, when he gave a lot of money to Mayor Slay and he won. So there you go.
I think Sinkfeld is better known and better identified than Humphreys as a big contributor in the state. And you could see that Sinkfeld's backing is beginning to have some backlash just by the way that Sinkfeld channeled some money into other sources that would give money to candidates in this election.
Well, what I'd heard is that it was the fact that he himself was writing these, you know, multi-$100,000 checks, and it was an attempt to, you know, address some of that backlash. Now, if you're paying attention and looking, you notice they all come from the same address in Westphalia or other addresses that are associated with Sinkfeld in the St. Louis area. But it's a kind of a way to avoid some of that backlash to say, oh, it's this, you know, group Better St. Louis or what are some of his, I can't even remember some of his
I don't know. And that honestly confused me a little bit, not only because I didn't understand what he was trying to do there, but it actually, at least philosophically, I think goes against why he's doing it in the first place. I think that when he started giving a lot of money, he did it mainly out in the open because he didn't support campaign contribution limits. He thought that giving directly to candidates was more transparent. And he thought that, you know, going through committees was kind of going around that. I'm not really sure. And he's done this in the past, too, where he'll give somebody $1 million and then he'll use some committees to give it. But you know it's from him. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a candidate preference thing, or maybe it's just to confuse news media people like us. But I just have to note that, you know, he has been pretty philosophically on the record that he likes to give directly because of what I just said.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller who would like to get in on the money discussion. Let's bring in Elizabeth, who's calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Yes, I just think it's interesting that Eric Greitens, who calls himself an outsider, has taken $200,000 from Shell Adelson, a billionaire from Las Vegas. And I just think it's so important to overturn Citizens United, the decision that unleashed corporate billions into the election process.
You're about to say the same thing
Citizens United wouldn't affect in Missouri because Missouri doesn't have campaign contribution limits, which is why you have the casino magnate, the caller just talked about, being able to give $200,000 directly. There is a proposed constitutional amendment that would potentially bring campaign contribution limits back, but that will almost certainly face a legal challenge because of the wording of it. And even if it manages to pass and be implemented in the law, it does not cover municipal or county elections, which I think could end up being a pretty substantial loophole if that is ever implemented.
The governor, whoever is elected, is not going to be a big supporter of campaign contribution limits either.
Yeah. They're going to need the money to.
Right.
Yeah. And Koster is on record opposing them.
Politicians do love their money. There's no question about that. Have to take a break in a moment or two. We talked about name recognition earlier. We've got Jay Ashcroft, who won his primary race yesterday. Russ Carnahan won in the lieutenant governor's race. And Robin Smith, who is known locally as a television personality, also won. How do you see that Robin Smith-Jay Ashcroft race shaping up amongst people who are supposedly well-known and apparently are?
Jason and I were talking a little bit about this last night. I think if you're outside the St. Louis area, you have absolutely no idea who Robert Smith is. Jason's not a native. His first exposure to Missouri was here for college. And he's like, I didn't know who she was. She's locally very well known. But I mean, the Ashcroft name is still known statewide. John Ashcroft obviously held multiple statewide and federal offices. And if you're known for being a TV personality in St. Louis, I don't know that that extends beyond Channel 4's viewing area.
I do have to point this out because I think it is significant that, and I think I might have said this before, but Robin Smith, with her primary victory over two not-so-good opponents, became the first woman African-American ever to get a statewide nomination in the state's history. I think that's an important distinction whether she wins or loses. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we saw with Bev Randles, who is also African-American, that it's a difficult thing to even get the nomination, let alone become the first African-American statewide official. But, I mean, Jay Ashcroft is going to be a tough opponent. He did lose a state Senate race a couple of years ago against Jill Shoup, but that was a whole different electorate to what we're going into now. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, his father, John Ashcroft, lost his first election, too, to Congress. And that, I think, actually probably helped him later in his career of knowing what to do differently. The other thing is Jay Ashcroft had to walk this kind of fine line in a state Senate district that leaned Democratic, not to appear too conservative. That was difficult when your last name is Ashcroft. He can be the full Ashcroft now as he goes statewide. I think he's going to take advantage of the fact that his father is well-known and well-liked throughout the state. And it'll be an interesting race to watch, for sure.
Robin did no advertising during the primary, maybe because she thought she didn't have to spend any money. But
I mean, in a race like that, you know, St. Louis can kind of carry it. If nobody else is really voting in the race, St. Louis County can carry you statewide.
It's about a third of the vote, isn't it, David? St. Louis County, about a third of the statewide
vote.
Yeah,
and then Jackson would come in. Right. Jackson County, Kansas City cluster would come in.
Right.
I remember years ago when a television personality by the name of Bob Chase ran for Congress. You'll remember that, Dave, perhaps. And it went absolutely nowhere.
Well, I think, I mean, just by the fact that she got the nomination, I think that Robin Smith's candidacy is more viable than that. So, and I think that she will probably be getting a lot of money from Democratic sources because the Secretary of State's office is too important to just give up. And but her job for the next few months is getting her name recognition up.
Right, yeah. Right.
Oh, go ahead.
And we know that she's good on screen, good on TV.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Come back after this break and continue our conversation following up on yesterday's Missouri State primary. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We continue our conversation following the results of yesterday's Missouri primary election. With me in studio are David Robertson from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, Rachel Lippman, and Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio reporters. And there is a lot to talk about, and we can't get it all in, but I want to go back to the city, Rachel, and to you, because there was an interesting little race going on in the sheriff's race for the city of St. Louis.
There was.
And I think we should mention that, because that means that a long time and to many a familiar personage, the Jim Murphy, the longtime sheriff of St. Louis, is out, and what's happening next?
What's happening next is there is a, Vernon Betts won the Democratic primary, actually fairly handily as well as another, like, I think, surprisingly wide margin of victory there. He is a former sheriff's deputy. So he was one providing prisoner transport, security at the courthouses, serving papers, the duties that sheriff does, until Murphy got wind in 2011 that Betts was interested in challenging his seat. Murphy pointed to a directive that said the sheriff's department does not allow their employees to participate in political activity and fired Mr. Betts. Mr. Betts took a run at him anyway, nearly won in 2012, and that, I think, provided the background for a victory in 2016 against a city alderman from sort of south central St. Louis around the Hampton 44 area and three other lesser-known candidates.
So we'll have a new face in the sheriff's office.
New face in the sheriff's office.
A new face in the circuit attorney's office, Kim Gardner. We talked about her before. I'd like to play a clip of her reacting to her election victory yesterday, because she's replacing mentioned Jennifer Joyce, who's been there for, what, 16 years, I guess.
16, at least.
Here's Kim Gardner reacting to her election victory.
I think people want change. People know we need to do things differently. I think the community understands that we can't continue to do things the same. We all want quality of life. We all want to make sure our streets are safer, but we also have to address the broken criminal justice system and how we build trust.
Okay, that's Kim Gardner, who won the circuit attorney's race. And if we haven't pointed it out before, we should. The fact that's tantamount to election. There is
yes.
no Republican
yes.
counterpart.
Yes.
What can she do that's different, Rachel, would you think? Different from what Jennifer Joyce has been doing?
I think the fact, this gets back to sort of the outsider sentiment in a little bit. Yes, she did work at one point as an assistant circuit attorney, but she's built her career in other things, including in politics and working in her family's funeral home business. She had the take of a lot... tackled and was willing to talk about and express a lot of the issues that came up after the protests in Ferguson and Michael Brown's shooting, the unequal treatment of African Americans in the criminal justice system, the fact that you need to build trust between the community and law enforcement to make this work. She picked up the endorsement of a number of the activist groups, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, the SEIU put some money in there. She had Clay's backing of Lacey Clay, the congressman. And I think she presented a face that had skills, was talking mm-hmm. about having a policy to do this, but was not status quo. And I think in some ways, having the backing of Jennifer Joyce and of the Police Officers Association hurt Mary Pat Carl more than it might have helped her.
Who was
Jennifer Joyce's selected candidate. Yeah, the day she announced that Joyce announced that she was not running, she put her support behind Mary Pat Carl.
Dave Robertson, the congressional races went very much as expected.
Yeah.
The incumbents rarely have much difficulty in winning re-election. Maria Chappelle Nadal had little impact in the race against Lacey Clay.
Right. Both Maria Chappelle Nadal and Bill Haas, who had hoped to score better.
Well, he's already announced that he's running for mayor, at least in the emails that I've been receiving.
Really were not very competitive in that race. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any surprise anywhere in the state in the primary.
Yeah. But I would say She lost by a large margin.
Yeah.
Going up against any member of the Clay family is extremely difficult.
Or incumbents. Congressional incumbents. Yeah.
But I will say she did end up giving a lot of money from her state account, which, you know, is a little bit controversial because Lacey Clay has filed an FEC complaint about it, to a bunch of candidates in the city and the county. And some of those candidates won, especially in committee person races. And the big person that won was Rochelle Walton Gray for the county council, which I think we were going
to
get to. I cannot emphasize enough how important that win was for St. Louis County politics.
Explain why.
Well, right now the Democrats have a 5-2 majority on the council, but it's not what it seems because Hazel Irby, who is a Democrat from University City, has never gotten along with Steve Stanger. And at times has joined with the two Republicans, Colleen Wassinger and Mark Harder, to go against some of the more controversial initiatives. Most mm-hmm. things in the county council pass unanimously. Now that you have one of Stanger's biggest allies, Mike O'Meara, leaving after December 31st and being replaced by somebody who is not going to be a Stanger ally, Stanger no longer has a functioning majority on the council. Now, there could be situations where maybe you get one of those four to go along with something and you still pass it, but it's a lot harder now.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw in the waning days of the Charlie Dooley administration, when he lost his functioning majority, how politically disastrous that became for him.
And Irby not only is not a Steve Stanger fan, didn't support him in the primary, she went and supported Rick Stream in the general election against Stanger. It was part of some of the Fannie Lou Democrats endorsing Rick Stream.
Yeah, and I haven't talked with her directly, but I think that even though I don't think Walton Gray and Irby are incredibly close allies, she was definitely not a fan of O'Meara. And the fact is, because she was kind of on the outside looking in on a lot of things, she was more of the voice of the opposition at times than somebody could hold real leverage. Now, she kind of transfers from being the voice of the opposition to at times, I mean, Stanger's going to have to deal with her a lot more seriously now. if she can come to the table with four people. I mean, it's really a big deal. And I cannot imagine Steve Stenger is happy with that result at all.
You're nodding your head, Dave Robinson.
I completely agree with that. I think both in the city and in the county, on the north side, you've seen the shadow of Ferguson really coming across these elections. And I'll be interested to see. This was a very convincing victory by Walton Gray. And it's going to be interesting to see, the precinct results, to see how different precincts came down in this.
And that district was a majority African-American district.
Right,
but
right.
Oftentimes, as is the case in St. Louis County politics, it was, you know, the representative was a Caucasian union member. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference, though, is you see someone like Gina Walsh, who's a state senator from that same area, who has, I think, gone out of her way to make alliances with the African-American political community there. And that showcases by the fact she was running unopposed and won convincingly in 12. O'Mara upset a lot of people in the African-American community when he was the big driver behind a renter bill that you can look in the archives about, but it caused a lot of consternation. And just the fact that he's very close with Stenger. Stenger has had some issues with some in the African-American political community.
Right.
So there was a mobilizing factor there. I'm obviously, as I said before, there are ways Stenger can still get controversial things done if he can get one of those four people to join with his allies on the council. But again, it's a lot harder for that to occur than it just being automatic every time, essentially.
Yeah. Let's bring in another listener, Scott, calling from Chesterfield, wants to be part of this conversation. So come on in, Scott.
Yeah, politically, there's the only difference between us and Kansas, I think, is that we have a Democratic governor. And in Kansas, the Tea Party and the Koch brothers, they got everything they wanted. And now the people of Kansas are feeling the pain. And that should be a learning experience for Missouri voters, especially those voters who only vote for president, that you don't want us to be like Kansas. They're hurting now, and it's because of their choices.
All right, thank you for the call. Anyone want to respond to Scott's comment?
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to be like Kansas or, to be honest, Illinois at this point. So I think
right.
It kind of goes both ways. But, you know, Illinois has divided government and Kansas is controlled completely by Republicans, obviously. So there's,
I think Missouri Republicans learned the lesson of Kansas, and their proposals for tax cuts are real, but they're more modest than the tax cuts in
Kansas.
That's
my thought too.
And didn't they have, there was at least one incumbent, might have been a U.S. rep versus a state rep, but there was some blowback to the kind of, you know, Tea Party, super conservative Republican last night with Huelskamp.
Right. Well, in that race and in some races in the Kansas City area, moderates defeated more conservative Tea Party type Brownback supporters.
Which was not necessarily the case in Missouri.
Right.
We have an interesting email here I'd like to get your reaction to. It's unsigned. Do any of you anticipate a strong showing in the general election by Lester Turilli's independent campaign for governor? Heavily advertised, as many of you have seen along the billboards.
Yeah.
On 44. One sec. He seems to be a small government conservative. Is his campaign likely to split the conservative vote, improving Koster's odds here in Missouri?
I'd say the chances of that really depend on how much money he puts in. If he is an independent and puts in $10 million of his own money, then yeah, he'll have an effect. But if all he's doing is putting himself on billboards, I think it'll be marginal, but if the race is close, it might be enough to make a difference.
I mean, I think it would have to be a super, super, super close race. It's still an expensive state to run a campaign, and you've got two expensive media markets that get a good chunk of the state. And if you don't have the money to do it, especially with presidential election as well, you know those ad prices, those ad times are going to be sky high.
I wonder how close that race is likely to be. I mean, none of us has a crystal ball,
no.
But if we have 100 or 98, 97 days to go, whatever it is, Any thoughts about that, Jason and David? You guys are on top of this every day.
The last two gubernatorial elections have not been close at all. I believe Nixon won his first election by almost 20 percentage points over Kenny Holsoff, which in Missouri terms is like not only a landslide, but like an ultra landslide. And I think the margin went down a little bit when Spence was on the ballot, Dave Spence, the Republican nominee, but it was still a double-digit victory. I don't know if that was because Nixon is just a very well-known entity in Missouri. He'd been attorney general for four terms, or the Republicans were lacking. I think you have a situation now where, although Koster has really immense political skills, I'm not sure if he's as well-known as Jay Nixon. Right. So that will probably make it closer, especially if, you know, Greitens' name recognition continues to go up because people and himself are spending so much money. Mm-hmm.
Dave?
Yeah, I guess I see three additional factors. One is the campaign is going to make a difference, and both Koster and Greitens are going to experiment with ways to dig in to their opponent's support. And how that plays out, I think we can't totally anticipate at this point. Second, national trends make a big difference in this race. I think there's going to be a real issue about how well Trump is going to be able to mobilize Republican voters down ballot, or if Trump mobilizes Democrats down ballot. And the third thing is, if Trump is driving some Republicans away, they may go Libertarian and they may vote Libertarian down. I'd see the Libertarian candidate having maybe more of an impact in a very, very close race than Torelli.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, and my one question with that is I have a lot of friends who are granted in other states, so this isn't Missouri. Not a fan of either candidate running in the presidential race. They're still going to vote down ballot for their home party, the GOP. I don't know, is there enough dissatisfaction overall that they're going to vote Libertarian straight ticket? I would wonder more if some just don't stay home, period. I mean, I don't see a whatever the equivalent of a yellow dog Democrat is on the GOP side. I could see them protesting the presidential vote. I just don't know that they would continue that down ballot.
Right. If the Libertarian candidate Johnson is able to pull, say, even 6-7% of the vote, probably pull along another additional percent for the Libertarian candidates down ballot. And that could make a difference, like I say, in a close race.
Boy, and this election cycle, anything can happen and is likely to happen between now.
We don't even know what can happen.
No, absolutely.
The unknown
not.
Unknowns.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other thought I have is, I mean, last night going into the results, I think we all kind of assumed like the attorney general's race would be close on the Republican side, or the lieutenant governor's race would be close, or the governor's race would be close. And frankly, none of those races were really that close. Even the Hensley-Zimmerman race, I don't really think that would – I mean, Hensley won by a pretty decent margin.
That was late, though. My
point is, like, sometimes we have this expectation that we're watching a very vigorous campaign and there's a lot of back and forth, yes, and both candidates have a lot of money and maybe name recognition, but that doesn't necessarily mean the result is going to be close. Sometimes it does, though.
We have 15 seconds. A final thought, Dave?
We're going to say the election is close because we don't know which way it's going to break wide open.
Yeah. And what happens at the top, as we've indicated, it could change everything mightily. Thank you all so much. It's been a great hour. Thank you, Jason Rosenbaum, for being with us. Dave Robertson, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Bridger Libin, thank you for being with us.
Pleasure.
Nice job, all of you. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.